Hello everybody, welcome to this chapter 6 of Organization Behavior. It's titled as Motivation, Concepts and Theories. A very interesting chapter. I would say this is a backbone of studying OB. One of the reasons we are studying OB is to understand behavior, yours as well as others. And with the view of understanding behavior, we have to take it further into understanding how to put it into practice. So one of the key areas of understanding human behavior is motivation. Why motivation? Because motivation has got a very important role to play in your personal life as well as in your work life. So let's go along and see what the topics that are being covered in this module. It starts with why motivation. The motivating process itself, next. Then comes a type of motivation or the types of motivation. And finally, we'll be concluding with a number of theories of motivation which have been created by a number of researchers. Right? So let's start off and talk about why motivation. Organizations need to motivate employees for the following reasons. Number one, to direct employees' skills, competencies and knowledge towards job performance. Number two, to direct employees' skills, competencies and knowledge towards organizational requirements. One is about the job proper which you are doing. I want to see that you do it well. So I need to understand motivation. Why are you supposed to do your job well? Because the organization has got some requirements. Each of us working in the company is a unit of work. We are all units of performance. And all the units of performance have to do a good job so that the organization requirements are taken care of. To enhance employee job satisfaction, when you get motivated, you automatically feel good about the job. So you experience what is called a job satisfaction. Now what motivates you is up to you. It could be the compensation package, the salary that is offered to you. It could be the job proper. It could be the people with whom you're working. There could be various reasons, either individual or a combination of these reasons. Right? The last point in the slide is to increase employee commitment to job and organization. The moment you're satisfied, which comes because of your motivation, you'll find yourself getting committed to the job and the organization, which shows in the way you engage yourself in the job that you do and also engage with the organization and its needs, etc. So this is an important part of it. Now, managers motivate employees for the following reasons: to attract candidates suitable to the job and organization. Now there's a job profile or a job specification sheet which is entailing the requirements of a particular job function or a particular slot that is vacant. Now I want to attract the proper candidate there. So I advertise, and then we have applicants applying, and we have applications coming in, shortlisting, finally we have the interview rounds. Now after the interview round is over, the person joins the company. Everybody who joins a company first time for the first few days or the weeks or months, they're pretty motivated because it's new. And they create their energy to stay in the company and contribute maximum. Somewhere down the line, this motivation usually comes down because there is a certain amount of comfort zone and you have already sort of proven yourself and got accepted perhaps. So there's a likelihood, it happens in most cases, that your motivation slightly comes down due to the reasons of already being there. And that's the time I want to enhance your performance. I want to see that the motivation is kept alive because I want you to handle more and more responsible functions. So you have to go through certain types of orientation. It could be some personal coaching, training, development, etc. Second point is to retain competent and high performing employees. The more I have motivated people in my organization, the more they will work towards competency. And they will be performing very high levels of performance. To enhance human resources competency as a distinctive competitive advantage. When I have a task force which is highly competent, it's because they are highly motivated. So when my company, my organization, to the industry which, to which I belong, has got high resource competency, then what happens is, as compared to another organization in the same industry, I would be competitively ahead of them, because my boys, my girls would be in a position to take on anything because they are having very high levels of performance, capabilities and competence. So if you notice some companies, good product, good strategies, everything is there, but within the company there is something which is not happening, the human motivation, and that creates a sort of a negative energy. Performances are happening, but they are happening with certain types of pressure where people are not very happy, and the human resources, skills and competencies and abilities are not properly tapped. And such an organization will usually find that people are not staying, they leave, new people are being taken, and they start wondering where we are going wrong. Everything starts from the top, I always say this. If the organization at the top is very clear that we have to treat people properly, raise their motivation levels, make them learn skills and competencies, put a willingness into them, such an organization will always have a distinctive competitive advantage over others in the same industry. The last one is to reduce absenteeism, which is, what is absenteeism? Being absent on a stray day is not absenteeism. Absenteeism is a pattern of behavior. Absenteeism is a pattern of behavior in which the employee has got a pattern of staying absent regularly. All he needs is a reason, and he will give you some reason which seems convincing, and he would stay away from the work. Now this absenteeism is actually a pattern. When you go back and understand, there is a subject called industrial psychology. We discuss about absenteeism. Now absenteeism has got a root. The root is that person is not satisfied with the job. So what he does is he gives an excuse to stay away from the job. Now this, why is he not satisfied? Because he's not motivated. Why is he not motivated? There could be internal reasons, the person himself and his personality, or maybe the job function or the organization, the way they treat him. These could be the various reasons. So if I want to reduce absenteeism, I can give the best shot by keeping my boys motivated. Mind you, even after motivation, the person may be getting into absenteeism, there could be other factors. But this is one of the contributory factors. When a person feels motivated to come to the office and not stay back out of the office, that's a very major step towards tackling absenteeism. Right? Why motivation again? There are two reasons that's given in the slide. There are many more. Managers motivate employees for the following reasons: to increase employee productivity, individual productivity, and to enhance what is called as organization citizenship. A citizen belongs to a country. So every employee is working in an organization is a citizen to the organization. So what do you mean by citizenship? Sense of belonging, sense of pride, sense of contribution, sense of enhancing the image of the company by exemplary behaviors. Those are all the aspects of citizenship. So these two are the contributory factors as per this slide, but there are other reasons also. Now let me explain one very important reason not given in the book nor in the slide. Why motivation? This question keeps coming up. You and I have got our own behavioral upswing and downslides. We all have our upswing and downslides. We are not consistent throughout the day, right? Since we are not consistent, now you may find me highly motivated early morning, but by 11, 11:30 or so, my motivation level may come down. Now when I am highly motivated in the morning, my productivity will be high. Around 11, 11:30, my productivity may come down. It does come down in many cases. Then post lunch, the productivity is very low because my energy level is low. I just feel a little switched off. We are not robots. We cannot work consistently like a computer or a machine with the same output because we are subjected to mood swings, to behaviors and whatnot. Try as much you may to manage and control. These are some attributes of human behavior that actually affects all of us. So in the afternoon when the productivity comes down because of my lack of interest, again it's quite a bit of an effort. So somehow you push yourself, or the organization, the team pushes you, the leader pushes you to come and engage yourself in the work. And then, you know, you push and bring yourself to a certain level of productivity by showing some forced interest. This happens to most of us. So around say 3 o'clock, you're working, and then suddenly you feel something inside you. What is it? You feel tired. You feel tired. Now this tiredness is not because you're working for long hours. It's because of the way your internal climate is responding. And then by evening, by 5:36, when you're leaving the company, the office or the factory where you're working, you'll feel really too tired and you'll start feeling a little stressed. Whose fault is it? Nobody's fault. It's the way human beings are. Now, it should be your skill, individual skill. Also the skill of the organization and the team leader and the top bosses to realize this human aspect. Most of them know it. Now, what is expected from you from a day's output? Everybody expects that I give consistent output. If I'm giving a certain output in the morning, I want it to be consistent. There are targets given on monthly basis. There are targets given on weekly basis, and there are targets that are given on a daily basis. Or you yourself give yourself a target. Now, this target, if I want to achieve during the day, in the morning I may achieve say 50% of the target, and the target may slowly come down somewhere around for 1 or 2 hours. I may not do anything, zero target, zero achievement. And then suddenly during the end of the day, I realize that today's daily target is not done, and there has to be an accountability during the day. And then you start pushing and stressing yourself out. So it goes in a very zigzag way. And this zigzag part of the human behavior, the human mood swing, is what affects the productivity. Now, why motivation? I have to have some means by which this swing is managed by me. So the organization has to create some methods, some ways by which this person who goes through a mood swing, being a human being, has to be kept afloat. So as far as possible, can I try to reduce the mood swing? Can I do something wherein I shift into productivity, I shift into action, I shift into delivering? Now this is something that modern HR people, organizations which are progressive, have understood. You and I are not robots to walk into a company, keep everything aside, emotions, you know, your attitudes, etc., and start functioning at gunpoint and produce results. You may do it up to a certain point. Beyond a point, what happens is human in you will start revolting. It will start reacting. So you may get stressed out. You may not be concentrating on the work because there is a pressure on you. Human beings are like clay. They have to be allowed to be themselves, but with a certain amount of push. Now that push is what are the various motivation initiatives taken by the company. Now one of the initiatives taken is, for example, post lunch. In some organizations I know, they have a 15 minute compulsory power nap. You'll all agree that after you take lunch, there is a little bit of drowsiness. So 15 minutes, all the lights are switched off. There's a power saving for the company, and people are into a bit of a snooze for 15 minutes with a timer. At 15th minute, the timer goes on, and then people awake, and most of them confess that we feel fresh. And then they're back into work. So you should understand the human body, the number of people who are working, their human body, each of them is different. And each of them goes through certain types of ups and downs during the day. Now, a very good HR person, a very good coach, a very good organization CEO will understand this part of it and design the various motivation initiatives accordingly. There are quite a few organizations to do that. The employee walks in and he or she feels like working, and they work for long hours without feeling demotivated, without the energy levels going down. not because of money being given. There's again a mistaken notion, the more money I'm giving you, the more motivated you will be. Your money, the big money that you're getting in your hand, would not be addressing your behavior, because you're human. Human reactions inside has got nothing to do with the money. Only your thinking process will tell you, I'm getting more money, so I need to push myself. Beyond the point, when the push comes to a shove, when it starts becoming intensely difficult for your body to take it, at that time you'll say, hell with the money, I don't want it, and your actual behavior will come out. I'm not against money as a motivation, don't take me wrongly. There are people and organizations who say that money is everything. Yes, up to a point. Make money and also feel satisfied with what you do. That's more important. In fact, I would say when you're satisfied with what you do, money comes running behind you. That's my experience. When you enjoy what you do, money comes running behind you. And you have to create the meaningfulness of the job to enjoy the job. That's in your hands. The organization and the people around you will give you tremendous amount of inputs of different forms. They will try to motivate you. Everybody motivates each other. There's no doubt about it. The way of motivating may be different. But if you find the meaningfulness, underline the word meaningfulness. If you find the meaningfulness of wanting to stay in the job and you really want to love the job, and then you create an attitude for the job, then you'll find that automatically you are job satisfied. And the more you're job satisfied, things start happening to you. Right? So, taking it further, there are types of motivation, motives we're talking about. Now, the word motive has not been defined here. Let me define it. What is a motive? A motive means it's a type of a drive. I would like to do it. It's a type of a willingness. A motive is like a willingness to do something. Where is this drive or willingness coming up? It's coming up because of a certain need. Underline the word need. All motivation is addressing a need. A need of the moment, a need of the situation, a need of the person's living. A need of the moment, a need of the situation, and the need of the person's living. That is what is a need. So every motivation has a need at the starting point. Remember this. If I am motivated to talk enthusiastically in front of the camera right now, there is a need in me. The need is what? The need, if I've identified, it's the need to ensure that this topic is coming across to you very well. There's a need. It's not just a routine where I walk into the studio and I talk to you. It's a need. So I do my bit of a rehearsal. I run through the whole thing because I feel excited about it. I would like to give you my best. I would like to give you as many inputs as possible given the time. And so that need arises in me. And what does the need do? The need gives me a drive. Hey, I want to see that the students are getting the best. So I try to edit the slides which are given to me. I do something here and there. And then I see that the flow and everything goes in the line with what I think you'll understand. And so the drive comes in. So the need creates a drive. And the drive, what does it do? It gives me the push into action. What's the action? The action is a production. The action is a producing the particular the talk and the module which is coming across to you. Let me give you a primary example, a very simple example of need. There's a theory called need drive theory of motivation. Need drive theory of motivation. When you're thirsty, what do you need? You need water. Is it chilled water? No, just plain water. All of you will agree. So when there's a need, when I'm thirsty, the thirst is telling me that there's a deficit. Now that's a word I want you to underline and write it down. Deficit. Deficit means within my body, there is a temporary deficit or a temporary scarcity of water. So it sends a signal to the brain, and then what happens is I feel a signal in the form of a thirst. And this thirst, what does it do? It immediately triggers me. The thirst is a drive. The drive tells me, come on, go ahead and have water. So I pick up a glass of water and I have it. And after I get my water into my system, that's called as satisfaction. The term is technical in this case. Need, when it is fulfilled, it gives you 100% fulfillment, which is called as satisfaction. whenever a need is fulfilled, whenever need is taken care of completely, the deficit is taken care of, it creates a certain state of fulfillment which is 100%, which is called as satisfaction. So next time when you use the word satisfaction, make sure that it is a 100% thing. And you exclaim that particular thing from your mouth, satisfaction. So all of you will agree, when you felt extremely thirsty, you just went for a glass of water, plain water, and you had it. And then you felt that excellent state within you. That state is a state that arises as a motivation state. The need has been fulfilled. And during that state, if I tell you, come on, let's do this, would you not do it? That's exactly the one. So that's need. Now at the going along with the discussion, I would like to give you some more inputs. Not a part of the exams, not a part of the slides, but since I'm talking about needs, there's also one more word. That word is called as want. Now what's the difference? When I am thirsty, I need water. But I may want a bottle of soft drink. I may want some fruit juice. I may want something else, an energy drink. Now what's the difference? How do I differentiate? Whenever a need is fulfilled, there is 100% satisfaction. Just think about it. Go back to the experiences you have gone through. Whenever you have had a glass of water, when you were thirsty, a plain water, has it not given you satisfaction? Yes. But when you have opted for a soft drink or an energy drink or something else, you have had it, it has given you a good amount of satisfaction perhaps, or it has not given you satisfaction. And what does it do? It starts going into the memory. It remains there. So I had a soft drink when I was very thirsty, and I compare it with the second experience which is yet to come. So when I go for the second soft drink, I start comparing. I want it as cold as that, as energetic as that, etc. So my brain starts comparing. So what is a want? A need plus desire equal to want. Need plus desire equal to want. So what does want do? The want leaves a memory. A need, when it is fulfilled, does not leave a memory. Think about it. So many times you have had a need to sleep, need to drink water, need to eat. Now consider all the moments when your needs were fulfilled. Need, underline the word need, not wants. When you really felt hungry, were you choosy about the food that you wanted? There must have been one moment at least in your life where you were stuck up somewhere, really hungry, and a person like you who might have been too choosy about food, you couldn't help it, you ate whatever was given. Am I right or wrong? So, when the need is fulfilled, need is not driven by thinking process, it's straight away instinct. There are two drives in us, the instinct and the rational. Rational things. So when there's a want, my thinking process comes. And anything, outcome of thinking goes as a memory. Any outcome of an instinct does not become a memory. So that's why when needs are fulfilled, you just feel good about it and it's not there. But when a want is fulfilled, it leaves a memory and memory keeps comparing. And every time the comparison takes place, satisfaction goes up and down. That's why when wants are fulfilled, we are always wanting more and more and more and more. That's why the whole marketing community tries to tap on your wants. All you need is water. Today we have flavored water. I'm not against it. Don't take me wrongly. Today we have flavored waters. We have waters which are having flavored, even fruit juice combined with this. Many, many items in the market we can see. Everything is focusing on the wants, because the whole market is driven on wants, not on needs. When you are hungry, you need nutrition. Nutrition can be a small pill like this. It can be some powder. It can be a plain food that you're eating, which is giving you all the nutrients important. What do? We convert into want because desire is there. Why don't we do this on the top? We put this garnish. We put this extra A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, and we get a dish and we eat it with relish. We enjoy it. High level of motivation or high level of fulfillment, but not satisfaction all the time. Not satisfaction all the time. Okay, so recognize in your own life, situations. In different situations, there are different needs, by the way. Every situation has got a different need. I am standing and talking to you in front of the camera. Now, I have a need. My need is that I have to be comfortable here. The position between the cam and me should be pretty comfortable. I am reading it from a laptop in front of me, which should also be comfortable for me to read. So, I don't have to turn around and see the screen. Some basic needs are there. Not everything may be a need. Some of them may be wants. So, I need to classify. This is the basic requirement I have to go through. So, that need is satisfied. More than satisfied here. And because the need is satisfied, I find myself able to give you what I think is the best and maybe better. Right? So, motives can be classified as primary, secondary and general motives. Motives can also be classified as power, achievement, affiliation, security and status motive. Let's see what are these. Primary motive. These motives can be unlearned and are physiology based. They are based on a body. They include hunger, sleep, avoidance of pain, sex, marital concern, etc. Everything to do with your body and your fulfillment of your body. General and secondary motives take precedence over primary motives. General and secondary motives take precedence over primary motives. Right? Now, what is the general motive? These motives are can be unlearned but are not physiology based. They are social based and also psychology based, some of them. They include curiosity, manipulation, activity and affection motives. Is it your body need to be curious? Is it your body that needs to be curious? No. It's not a body need. It's a need of your mind, the thinking process. Now, when you get curious, or let's take the second word, manipulation, a negative manipulation, not a positive. Suppose I'm manipulating you and I get manipulated. It's a feeling. Okay? So, this need is there in you, but this need, what does it do? It affects your body. And you feel not so good about you. You start feeling some bodily signals that you're not happy about. And you wonder what's gone wrong. It's here that's gone wrong. So, this is one of the motives of manipulation that actually is affecting me. I'm not saying they're good or bad, but they are there in each of us. Jealousy. Okay? Guilt. Shame. These are all some of the general motives that happen to us. They tend to increase stimulation in a person and also are also called as stimulus motives. What is a stimulation? It's a type of a push. Something is stimulating, it gives you a push. The push can be towards your well-being or it can be towards against your well-being. But it does do this thing. In fact, your thinking process is a stimulus motive. Our thinking process, whatever we think, is a stimulus motive. So it pushes you towards the goal or away from the goal. It pushes you towards joy or towards sorrow. Right? So you need to manage your the way you think. That's why we always say that if you think the world sucks, it sucks. If you think the world is rocking, it's rocking. Because your thinking process can create the motive in you to take you towards the goals. Everything is given to you and yet you feel not so good about yourself. So first work on that. My entire training career is based on inside working about this, because I come across a lot of people who are very so-called successful in terms of when you look at them, you know, working in a good company, a good position, all the money in the world, and yet there is a lot of dissatisfaction within themselves, because this aspects, the internal aspects of people are not properly handled by them and they don't know what to do about it. Then they run helter-skelter without knowing themselves. So it's important that the inner has to be taken care of. Once the inner is taken care of, the external will automatically take care of itself. So then you know where you stand, what sort of limits you are into. Okay? So when we take it further, secondary motive. They play a pivotal role in organization behavior, the most important role. They are closely related to learning concepts. They include need for achievement, need for power, need for security, need for status, need for affiliation, etc. Now when you are in an organization or in a group, there is always this social need of wanting to prove oneself, wanting to belong, wanting to create a status, wanting to be unique, etc. It's a very common human nature. Now, what are we saying here? We are saying that primary motive being whatever they are. A primary motive is telling me that I need to take care of my physiological needs. I have a need to sleep. I have a need to sleep. I'm overworked in the office. I've worked for more than 12 hours. and there's a deadline to be done, and so there's an achievement to be done, there's an acceptance by the senior management that I want. And so what happens is this secondary motive, it overrides my primary motive. So despite my body revolting that you need to sleep, I will still continue doing this because this motive is overriding the primary motive. This motive overrides the other general motive also. No matter what, let's do this for the evening. So 12 hours becomes 14 hours, 16 hours you work. I'm not commenting upon working, I'm not commenting upon good or bad. The point is, observe this when it's happening to you. My simple mantra is, keep your body all the while in a need fulfillment state. It's very important. When it's need fulfilled, you can keep on stretching. That's why short breaks are very important when you work. I have a routine which starts very early in the morning, 5:30, every day, even Sundays. And it doesn't end earlier than, say, 11:30 at night. And throughout the day, I have a series of varied activities. It could be teaching, it could be something like a video shoot, it could be a training program in a corporate environment, or it could be something else which I'll be doing. And plus, I do other activities, I've got a couple of other businesses also. So I keep on giving myself variation in the routine, A. Second thing I do is I try to give short breaks. And that short break is not distraction, it is more of a recharging your batteries. And that should be designed by you. Nobody can design it for you, you have to design it. And you've got to be very clear that this is my break time. Take a break, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, come back again, you feel rejuvenated. It's important, right? So, power motive. Now what's a power motive? Power means I want to be in control over a situation and maybe people. So Adler, one of the researchers, advocated person's overwhelming drive for superiority of power. This is human. Every human being wants to take charge, want to be in power. You know why? You know why? Because human beings feel inadequate within them. They want to see that everything is captured and everything is kept under control. Fear is what makes people hold power. Fear. Fear of losing something. Fear of not being able to understand something. Fear of, not being able to manage something. All this comes in the form of a coping skill, in the form of a power. It implies the need to manipulate others for superiority. This is the superiority that one experiences and feels great about. To what extent? Only the person knows it. People strive for power in order to overcome their inferiority complex. It's a very extreme word. I would rather say that they feel deficit inside. They feel deficit inside. See, holding a power is not wrong. Holding a power is natural for all of us. The point is, what is your power base? From what base is the power being wielded by you? Is it being wielded by you from an abundance or is it coming from a scarcity? When I say abundance means, I have a lot of things to give you. I have something to offer you. Okay, and I want to offer it to you. But I need you to get into a certain discipline. Now for the purpose of the discipline, I would like you to come to a certain confined space at a certain time and I would like to deliver whatever I have to do. That requires a control over the people and the situation and the time. It's coming from a very positive way. But the power which is being put in the point number 3, inferiority complex, is a power which most people wield. I feel insecure about my job. I'm not very adequate about what I know in terms of knowledge base. My experience is a bit checkered, it's not very clear. Now I try to cover up by trying to control others. Many people do this. And I don't have the openness, the grace and the objectivity to say that I do not know. I am inadequate at this moment. I am willing to learn. This unfortunately happens as you're going higher and higher in the ladder. You may go for a training program of learning and development and all that stuff, but are you really open there? Are you willing to say that this is me? In this situation, I feel incomplete. This particular topic, I do not know. A lot of people would like to say they know everything. Today, that's the greatest tragedy about people. They throw words, they throw jargon, and they talk big, big things. So when I meet such people, I ask them exactly, when they throw a jargon, somebody the other day I met for my work, they threw some HR, new HR jargon, whose meaning I know. I asked them, what exactly do you mean by this? You're an HR person, you're a trainer, you do not know. I said, I do not know, that's why I'm asking. How come you do not know in spite of being a trainer? I said, I do not know at the moment, tell me. The purpose of asking were two things. Whether my understanding about the term is his understanding, this communication. Whether he knows exactly what he wants from me. So when I asked him, surprise of surprise, shock of shock, this person was beating around the bush. For one jargon, he gave another jargon and third jargon and finally did not come to it. Then I asked him, look, is this what you want? Ah, that's what I want. I said, if this is what you want, this is called as this. He says, but then people say this, people say that. I said, very good. For example, I just give an example. People abuse this word called leadership. Everybody uses the word leadership. Oh, we are having a leadership training, leadership. Now, what is leadership? Now, on this itself, one single word, so much of deliberation you can do. Somebody who doesn't know what is leadership, but who's been given a status to take up something, to drive the people in the organization, may be coming out from a power status like this. I'm giving example, live examples which I encounter every day in my work. Nothing negative about them, but they need to be sensitized to know, okay, if you do not know, say so and get to know. Because when you get to know, you're operating from abundance, not from scarcity. Scarcity of incompletion, you're not operating from. That's very important. People in administrative positions in business, government, industry strive for power. Now this is just a comment, I don't totally agree with this. Not everybody does this. Administrative people who are administering a particular office or some big government, they have to be keeping controls to see that everything is going as per thing. So they may wield the power. Now that need not be taken as a general thing because it's again individual in how they do it.